one less egg to fry, one less man to pick up after. I should be happy, but all I do is cry.
I cry, no more laughter.
Oh, I should be.
Good afternoon, Jennifer.
Good afternoon, Ed.
Good afternoon, Josh.
Wow, Ed, you just shot up in that volume.
I'm sorry. Was I really quiet? Oh, my God.
You were very quiet. And good afternoon to our special guests. On the line, we have Ryan and Matt from the Overthinking It podcast. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon, guys. Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're very glad to be here.
So you're with the Overthinking It podcast, but you do watch Glee, though I have heard a rumor that you mostly discuss Gossip Girl. Is that correct?
Well, you know, that's the show that we do, the main show on our website, overthinkingit.com, is the Overthinking It podcast. But at some point, Ryan and I discovered that he and I share a devotion to the shows Gossip Girl and Glee.
And the teen soap operas more generally. I think.
Really? Yeah, absolutely. And so we created a spin-off podcast called These Effing Teenagers that you can find in iTunes. And it's now a separate show from the Overthinking It podcast, where we just focus on Gossip Girl, Glee, and we take the Overthinking It tack on those shows, which is that we talk about them in terms of sociology and political science and narratology. We subject them, as we say, to a level of scrutiny that they probably don't deserve.
I'm dumbfounded. I'm without response on that.
I think the show is very brilliant. I've listened to every episode, and that's why I asked them on. I'm really glad that you guys came
Thanks.
On.
Thanks so much.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, amazing that you've listened to all those episodes and still actually decided to invite us on.
Right, because and we should warn anyone who cares to check out our show. Our show is unabashedly R-rated, and we have no respect for spoilers at all. So
we're
if you
spoilers for unrelated pieces of media.
sometimes we just put some spoilers in just for good measure, you know.
Well, that's so can you give me like the 2-minute version of the sociology of Glee? Like, what about Glee is interesting from that perspective?
So I think that what's really interesting about Glee is, so on our on overthinking.com back in the fall, as Glee was premiering, there was actually we had a Glee war on overthinking.com. So if you go to overthinking.com, search Glee, you'll actually see that there's about 7 to 10 staff writers on overthinkingit.com. And some of the other staff writers, right as we were starting our podcast, started writing these articles about Glee and criticizing Glee and sort of, saying that, the main criticism was that there's not narrative consistency, that, you know, Kurt joins the football team in one episode and the next episode is not mentioned again, right? And there were all these, examples, the accusation was this was lazy writing. And the argument, Matt and I, in trying to counter this argument, argued that this is actually, it's not a bug, it's a feature, right? That this kind of inconsistency is actually really crucial to the vision of the world that Glee is presenting. And it's one that, in which, from the perspective of social sciences, it's under a framework that's called behavioral economics, right? And so it's a fusion of psychology and economics that says that people actually don't make well-informed or consistent decisions, right? And this fits with the vision of Glee and of teenagerhood, in which there is impulsiveness, and it fits with a world in which people break into song, right? And that the songs are these projections of the characters' interior and exterior lives, but in this fanciful kind of way, right? So that this kind of inconsistency, like the important things are consistent, like Quinn's still pregnant in every episode.
Yes.
Terry's still not pregnant. but that people's priorities are very much subject to fluctuation and to manipulation by others, whether that's by Sue, or by other members of the Glee Club, or the Cheerios. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit with respect. I mean, you saw this in this most recent episode, Home, a little bit with, well, in the ways that maybe we'll discuss. That's so I'm sure that was longer than a 2 minute description, but that's, as I said on one of our episodes, I consider concision to be one of my principal virtues.
But so I'm curious, like this, do you enjoy the show? The way you describe it, I wonder, like
yeah,
when I watch the show, it takes
singing awesome songs in it. What's not to enjoy?
That's it. Yeah, I guess that's it. I mean,
I guess I enjoy it in the way. I guess the meta question is, do I enjoy life? Because this is how I. This is unfortunately the overthinking it. You know, sauce is you know we I think we're a group of friends from college who found ourselves, you know, doing this in our spare time, right? Uh-huh. When we would get together, this is what we would talk about. We wouldn't summarize, we wouldn't review, we'd analyze. and unfortunately, and in our, you know, in just our approach to the world, our worldview includes analysis. And so, insofar as I enjoy life at all, I definitely enjoy Glee. I love Glee. But I think that I generally, when I sort of rate and enjoy pieces of media, what I really like is what it makes me think about and what the associations it brings to mind and the ideas. So I guess I enjoy media in a more abstract kind of way.
I think we'd also, I mean, on overthinking it, we would probably want to question an idea of enjoyment that precludes analysis, because very often, very often something is trying to get one over on you. You know what I mean? When it's asking you to shut your brain off.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I would certainly not say that. I mean, we managed to discuss Glee each week almost as long as it takes to watch the episode. So obviously, we're bringing a certain level of examination to it, and I guess we're just coming at it from a much more kind of pop culture-y, like background on the music. You know, our perspective definitely tends to come from the musical theater, the kind of, you know, growing up watching St. Elmo's Fire types of ways, and you guys coming at from it from a more sociological perspective. It's fascinating, and I'm definitely curious to hear what your thoughts are on this particular episode, Home.
This is an unstoppable juggernaut of pop cultural analysis, is what I see this union being.
That is true. This we very well could erupt in a geekgasm at any moment.
In an Iceland volcano like cloud of analytical ash that will blanket all of Western Europe and make
as
it
long as the airplanes can still run, I'm okay with this.
Oh, so usually about this time we kind of go through our temperature checks on the episode, just to kind of get a sense of what people think, a thought of particularly Home. Edward, what was your take on Home this week?
I see. You're going to hate me already. I already know you're going to hate me. I don't enjoy Kristen Chenoweth that much. So episodes that surround her, I'm not that excited about. And ever since Terry's been gone, Mr. Schuster is a quarter as fun. So I'm over him as well. So this episode was kind of tepid. Be 100% honest.
I do have to agree with you on that. It's interesting. Schuster being lost is kind of boring in a way.
Terry, the best thing about Will Schuster's storyline so far is when Terry walked in on Emma or Irma. Whatever her name is.
This was possibly my most tear-inducing episode, at least in a while, for entirely the most cheap reasons.
I did cry. I'm not saying I didn't cry, because I hold no. I need to stop watching these in public locations, because people are like, Ed, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. I'm just watching Glee, guys.
And guys, Matt and Ryan, what was your kind of temperature reading on this particular episode in regards to the rest of the season?
Well, which part of the season are you talking? I mean, do you mean the first 13, or are you talking about the back 9 so far?
You know, that is a good question. I mean, how would you place it in regards to this current back 9?
Well, lackluster.
Yeah,
and I think Ryan would agree with me there, especially considering the Madonna episode, which, you know, you heard it. It's episode 14 of the These Effing Teenagers podcast, called inexplicably the Cobra Kai mentality. But you know, we were just all over it and all over the crazy awesome sex montage, at which turned out to be, oh wait, can I not say what it turned out to be?
Go ahead.
Where there was a I'm sorry, I'm trying to respect the spoiler policy here, guys. I'm really trying to abide the rules.
This is like a blanket spoiler policy. Like, oh man, sorry.
Oh no, you can talk about anything that's already happened. No. You can talk about anything that's already happened.
Oh, it's already happened. You could talk about it.
Oh yeah.
When we discovered it was a dream sequence. It was very, you know, this was a very interesting thing. In this episode, I think it failed as entertainment. There wasn't an up-tempo song. You know, the fastest thing that we got was the Bruce Springsteen song, but also it failed kind of the thematic unity, which is something that this show does, I think, pretty well. You know, the kind of cognitive agenda setting of like, here is what this episode is going to be about, usually in close up. And here, you know, we had a close up of Mr. Shu in the Glee Club room saying, you know, find a new home. Right. And that, you know, and that's what got us going and what tied the A, B and C plots together. Even that seemed, seemed kind of forced. I think this was an episode where it departed from the way Glee has been, which is that every episode is kind of an event episode. Mm-hmm. And this was an episode that really belonged to a soap opera, you know, to a long-term serialized drama. And I think that the show has taken a left turn in the back nine here because it wasn't clear that it was going to get picked up for the other half of a full season order. So, you know, that I think they're kind of buckling down for the long haul now. And I think we're going to see more episodes like this that are just kind of like moving the plot forward by inches rather than having anything sensational happen. Also, you know, no up-tempo numbers.
Yeah, that disturbed me a lot as well. But Jennifer, I don't know. I think you had a different reaction to it. What was your temperature on this one?
Well, I mean, actually, I agree with most of the things that have been said about the episode. It didn't forward any major plot points. It was very handed with the theme and that, you know, sometimes it takes you a little bit partway through the episode to realize how the theme applies to different characters or groupings of people. But this time it was very, very straightforward. All that said, I still found it very moving and touching. And I liked the sort of, I mean, as much as I missed seeing some of the characters perform, I liked seeing the more fully developed characters and the more vulnerable side of some of the other characters that we don't get to see as much of every time. So
that is true. This one definitely gave us a stronger dose of the softer sides of things.
What's really interesting is that like we just got off an episode that was literally about the material girl materialism, and then this show was like, the beauty's in the inside. It's kind of like a stark contrast.
That is a good point. Well, we're definitely overdue for a song. Matt, do you need to run?
What's that? You know what? I do pretty soon because I am going, though Ryan is an academic, I am still a student, a trade school student. And, you know, though my academic background is in late 14th century devotional poetry, I got to go back to school, but I will stick around for one song and a little more conversation with you guys.
All right, cool. Well, let's give a listen to A Minute of Fire. This is probably most well known as a Pointer Sisters song, honestly, but this is written by Springsteen, and as it should be. Here is Fire with Kristen Chenoweth and Mr. Schuster.
I'm riding in your car. You turn on the radio. You're pulling me close. I just say no. I say I don't like it, but you know I'm a liar. 'Cause when we kiss, me home, say you wanna stay.
This song also has the distinction of being probably the third song I ever learned to play on the guitar.
Wow.
When I was 15 and still thinking that that would impress girls. So
how'd that work out?
Well, I'm married now.
There you go.
It just took another 15 years.
This was,
I guess, gosh, our second of three duets we got through between Christian Chenoweth and Matthew Morrison. They definitely seem to be throwing these two guys together, though personally I don't really know if their voices blend that well. Jennifer, what did you think about this one?
I liked it. I could think of worse voices to try to blend together. I mean, she has a quality in her singing that's, you know, border operatic at times, and he's definitely, you know, very, very musical theater, but I liked it.
Ed, you made the appalling statement that you're not a big fan of Christian Chenoweth.
Saying that I'm not a big fan. She's a great singer, but as April Rhodes, a character, I really don't want to travel down it. So, I do want to point out something that is very interesting about April Rhodes' character is, in both times, the first scene she was in, both episodes, Heart of Glass Blondie was playing in the background both times. There was an acoustic version during the Rhodes Not Taken episode that was playing in the background when we first met her. And then when we first met her this time, they played Heart of Glass Blondie, the original version, while they were at the roller rink.
I did not pick up on that.
I don't know. I'm obsessed with that song because of Lisa Mitchell, but that's...
Not because of Lily Allen?
No.
No, apparently not. Now, Ryan and Matt, how do you guys feel about this kind of Mr. Schuster, April Rhodes love affair? Or would you even call it a love affair?
Well, no. I mean, didn't they spoon all night and, like, hold hands?
Spoilers!
That is a spoiler. It happened.
That happened. And seriously, if that's not a love affair, then high school was much less successful.
We haven't gotten there yet, Matt. We haven't gotten there yet. We're going through it. Come on.
No, that's totally valid. Now, I mean, and that is the thing, that they did kind of have a pseudo love affair. I don't know. I mean, it was a little awkward, and was it good for them? I mean, was it what was important in Schuster's life at this time?
Well, I think that he wasn't really fleshed out in this episode. I mean, I think that someone said, I'm so over Shu. And that's, you know, I think that's because there was really nothing to care about. His motives weren't totally clear. You know what I mean? And they weren't sort of well developed.
That's exactly how I felt about it. I never quite knew why he was there. And then they got the big one less bell to answer number that we played at the top of the show. I could never figure out what either of them were talking about.
Yeah, well, yeah, I agree.
Ryan,
seemed like that number was a lot of screen time. Sorry, Ryan, I keep cutting you off. It's almost like it's our
podcast. I'm used to it.
That number took up a lot of screen time for not a lot of dramatic development.
Yeah, Ryan, did you have something on that?
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, I'm wondering, though, if we'll look back on this episode. Like, so right now, you know, I think our general consensus seems to be, like, we overall didn't like this episode so much. I mean, there were good things about it, but, you know, we're feeling a little lukewarm about Mr. Schuster's role in it and about the sort of tempo and energy of the show itself. I'm wondering if we sort of look back, you know, we'll get to the end of the season and look back, And there is a more long-term dramatic role of this. I mean, it actually, in some ways, it does work that Shu is lost, right? He is homeless. I mean, so if we wanted to try to, like, think that this thing that's making us feel a little uncomfortable or unsatisfied is possibly intentional, then it's working, right? So that he is, you know, he doesn't have his, he's a little unanchored, and is without a sense of purpose, And so if that's intentional, it's working, but it's still not making me feel great about it, right? but I think the second thing I wanted to say is that I think that there's not a you know, I don't think, you know, we have no evidence that they consummated the love affair. I mean, I think what Fire did is it carried over something from the previous time that Christian Chenoweth was on the show. Which is that there is a sexual tension, right? And I think that so this was my favorite number in this episode, and I think that it played, you know, it still is pretty low key, pretty soft rock, but especially like right up to the I guess it's, I mean, not exactly a typical first chorus verse structure, but there's like a little bit of a vamp that builds this tension, right? And they I think perform it really well. And I actually am happy when Kristen Chenoweth is on the show. I think she has this kind of, I actually like the way she plays the character and the way it interacts with Will. So this was like among my favorite parts of the episode. And because it had this tension to it, this playful tension.
I agree with that. I think that this was a cool number. And to move on a little bit to the one less bell to answer number, which we touched on, I really thought that was just entirely misplaced. And yeah, like you said, Matt, was just really long. Just kind of dragged on for a while.
Because the reason it felt long was because not much was happening. Yeah. You know, as far as the story goes, there were four beats. You know what I mean? She's mm-hmm. alone, he's alone. He tucks her into the couch. You know, she comes into bed. They hold hands. Yeah, and that's it. And you don't need 4 minutes of screen time to tell that much story.
You're exactly right. It was a 4 minute song, and when we got to the House Is Not a Home reprise, I was really feeling like, oh gosh, I'm totally done with this number. But we're gonna go ahead and sing a second song on top of everything.
There was and that was kind of weird. Even that was kind of weird coming out of Kurt's mouth, you know.
Yeah, maybe we should go back to the House Is Not a Home and get our temperature.
You know what, Ryan? You let these people run their own podcast, okay?
You let them run their own podcast.
They know how to do it better than we do.
Well, honestly, you read my mind. I was just about to say, let's go ahead. Yeah, there you go. Let's go ahead and listen to Kurt's version of A House Is Not a Home, which sounded much better to me when I listened back to it. But here is A House Is Not a Home is performed by Chris Colfer. And we'll give a little talk about Kurt and Finn.
Chairs,
here we go.
To the chair, even when there's no one sitting there. But a chair is not a house, and a house is not a home when there's no one there to hold you tight, and no one there you can kiss goodnight. A room is still a room, even when there's nothing there but gloom.
Actually our second of, or it was the first of two songs in the episode written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David. And just for total unnecessary trivia, currently Kristen Chenoweth is on Broadway in Promises, Promises, written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David. So
sure.
Totally unnecessary. I would have liked to see more kind of a larger tone with the Bacharach David work, because it seemed to clash, like then to go from this into like a Christina Aguilera song and then to end it on the song from The Wiz. They didn't quite blend to me for some reason, the songs in this episode. What did you think, Jennifer?
No, I mean, I agree. Other than just, like, musically they didn't, and tone-wise I don't think they did. But, again, this week was so heavy-handed with the theme of home that I can see why these songs ended up as they did. And, you know, home not just being, you know, your physical place, but your emotional place in yourself and in your group. And I understand why they're there, but yeah, it wasn't a very cohesive episode. It seemed like a nice little, like a little filler episode, but nothing major.
Yeah, it was kind of transitory. You know, Kurt is often called as having a peculiar voice. Not everybody likes it. Matt and Ryan, what's your read on your podcast about Kurt?
Well, were you listening? Well, he's a character that we love, and I think the I think the line from the last episode where he says, you know, I'm gay and she's African American, we make culture.
Yeah.
You know, that I think they really are taking that one to the bank and, you know, cashing it out for all it's worth. And, you know, and it's just the audacity of some of the things he does are great. Same thing with the Jane Lynch character on this show. But, you know, speaking of his voice, I mean, do you hear the auto-tune in that song? It's almost like T-Pain. The amount of pitch correction, especially in some of the falsetto stuff, like it's amazing that it is so processed. And I was hearing you say about you know, Kristen Chenoweth and Matthew Morrison not sort of fitting together. I mean, she comes out of musical theater to a great extent too, you know, premiering Wicked with Idina Menzel, and it'd be great to see them together on Glee in some future. I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but that would be a neat little pairing. And, you know, Matthew Morrison in South Pacific with God, they're going to take my actor card away. What's her name? With Paolo Zot and Kelly O'Hara.
Okay.
Right. Like, so these people who come out of kind of a similar universe, but they're also auto-tuned that I think there's a homogeneity. There's a homogeneity to the voice. And I think if people are not fans of Kurt, it may be because he retains some character despite the heavy production. But I want to ask this. Do you think this is an appropriate song for his character and for his motivations at this point in the episode?
Honestly, that was my next question. Personally, I don't. Personally, right. I feel it came kind of out of left field. Like, this isn't Kurt's issue. You know, Kurt's issue is more of kind of, you know, a being himself in society and kind of a self-honesty. And this house is not a home is so much more kind of internal, like inward looking and kind of old fashioned, where Kurt is nothing old fashioned about him. So it looks like we just lost Ryan. But yeah, so I agree with you, Matt, on that one. Jennifer, what did you think on this one? Did you think it really fit Kurt at all?
It did seem really old fashioned. And what?
I'm sorry.
Sorry, I'm a little fractured here. Yeah, I was again, this is another instance where I was a bit torn, because it was just such a joy to see Kurt have center stage for a little bit, mm-hmm. that I was willing to forgive the fact that it didn't quite fit. And yeah, I mean, Kurt has always been very open and comfortable about who he is. And I mean, it seems to be, you know, his two biggest struggles seem to be his unrequited feelings for Finn and his insecurity with his dad, mm-hmm. as much as his dad, you know, they're very open with one another about how they feel and what they want. He still doesn't quite feel that he'll ever have that connection or be all that his dad wants. So just, you know, and like, those are the two things that I really see, you know, Kurt struggling with.
Right. And this is, he's also a teenager. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's an adolescent. And this is a song that's about adult. This is a point not to make even yet another shameless plug on your show for my own. But this is in the latest episode of the TFT podcast, episode 15, and entitled Santorum. We make the point that this is a song about being an adult, about wanting to establish a household. You know, about wanting a stable relationship, about really building a home. And that's not where any of the teenage characters are at, nor should they be. But it is really nice. It was nice to see Kirk get a solo. It was nice to see Mercedes get a solo. It was even nice in the last episode to hear Santana sing one line
right?
A virgin, right? Because, you know, it's great to see these secondary characters at least have a little moment to shine.
It's very true. We actually, there was an interview this week with Heather Morris, who plays Brittany, talking about, you know, how she's hopefully going to have more stuff to do coming up, and how those lesser characters like Santana and Brittany really are coming to steal this show and become great showcases on the show.
Oh, yeah. Sure. It's a great article. Kind of a long read, but it's in the Advocate. So if you ever get a chance, you can also catch it on Oh No, They Didn't.
Well, really and good. So you bring up an interesting point, Matt, where I guess if you were to find any connection in this song, it's that Kurt is kind of trying to build a home with Finn. But once that the reality kind of comes at, he's not really comfortable with it and trying to do that through his parents. I know, Ed, you were kind of an early proponent of Finn's dad and Finn's mom and Kurt. Bert's dad getting together. So now that it's here, how did that feel for you?
Well, I think it's good. I love the montage of like, oh, fate brought them together, and the total Kurt did it himself. Like, your both your spouses are dead. You should talk. And that was fabulous. And I'm glad that even though they're trying to take them apart, like rip them apart, now that they're both like now that both Kurt and Finn are uncomfortable with it, they're trying to tear them apart, and how they're so committed. And I'm also really glad that we got to talk about Finn's dad and all that emotion. But speaking of parents, okay, I'm very disappointed because Mercedes' mom was going to come pick up Mercedes after she was passed out. And I wanted to see her mom because I need to see more parents. And I'm just reading on fox.com/Glee that there was another song that was recorded for this episode. And I believe that's why One Less Bell to Answer was so long as it was because there was Fergalicious with a duet between Kurt and Mercedes that was cut from the episode. Wow. So I think that's where they added the extra space from the One Less Bell to Answer. So
that's interesting.
I don't understand how that fit into context. I think that's why they cut it. But I'm sure it'll be in the bonus DVD. I'm sure.
There was also a song playing in the background of one of the roller derby scenes, which sounded like the Glee kids singing. There was Home Sweet Home, I think. I want to say it's a Def Leppard song or one of those
Guns
metal
Roses.
Hair bands. Was it Guns N' Roses?
I think it is.
Oh, well, there you go. So we've got the Kurt and Finn kind of family drama. I don't know, Ryan, do you have anything to weigh in on the Finn and Kurt family drama?
I mean, We did talk about this a little bit on the last episode of our podcast. I mean, I think it's what's interesting is I guess what Matt and I were debating is whether Kurt in setting up their parents, whether his intention is like this is like a second best, like he's like realizes he's not going to be with Finn and just wants to like create a situation where he's close to him all the time, mm-hmm. or whether this is like an intention for actually then creating the opportunity for the romantic relationship that he wants, right?
Which is creepy.
Right. And because of that, I mean, I think that also makes a little bit like the makes the Dionne Warwick number kind of creepy, right? Also the way they do a lot of really tight close-ups on Kurt, and they really, he's really made up, right? I mean, especially like his lips really pop, right? Like, it's in tension with the song, right? So that you know, you have on one hand these you know sort of teenage desire, right? And you know, and sort of teenager emotions, and then a very old kind of song, an old grown up kind of sentiments, and then this ambiguity of the intention of the setup, right? So, and it's, I mean, sometimes this kind of ambiguity or tension can be productive and drive the episode forward, but in this episode it didn't necessarily serve that purpose. It was confusing, right?
Yeah, it was confusing, and you make a good point. They don't really say whether like what Kurt's intentions are. What did you guys kind of decide? Did you fall on the side of he was trying to build a if I can't have him this way, then I'll get him that way, or was he trying to build a I'll use this to get him into bed?
We came down on different sides of that.
Yeah, Matt, your side.
I was the this is Plan B. Mm. This is, I just want to be, you know, close to his musky goodness.
Right. And I was much more of a, this is a incest power play was kind of more if that was not the intention, I think that I don't really see anything to say that Kurt, you know, abandoned his intention of making something happen romantically.
I'm going to use a Harry Potter story to put this in relation.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Have you finished them, Jen?
Oh, I'm all done.
Please don't. Okay. If you're going to discuss the seventh novel of Harry Potter, we will get hate mail. So don't go there.
Yeah. This is great. Well, I'm glad just my presence here is
No. Okay.
The end of the series, man.
No. Okay. Fine. Unrelated topic. There's a character in a series that doesn't exist that uses a love potion on another character, and like she's in a relationship with them for quite some time, and then she slowly weans him off that, and then she's upset when he doesn't love her back after all this time of pretending to love him, or pretending to love her. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking it's like if like first he gets in proximity with him, and then soon, like, I feel like Kurt's motivation is like, soon, even though it's completely illogical, soon he'll slowly start like, oh, he'll be my friend, and then yes. he'll be my a little bit more than friends, and then we'll be best friends, and then we'll be I think he's wanting it to creep along into this somehow impossible crescendo that's never gonna happen.
That's interesting, because I read it, I think I read for you with you the same intention, but I almost read it as just increasing, like he assumes there's some probability of them being in a situation where something could happen, and so them being roommates, or, you know, bunking together, living together, just increases that probability, right? You create more opportunities, so rather than a crescendo, it's just creating the opportunity just for a chance, you know, being in close quarters. So I think you could read it both ways. So it's interesting that you read it as a more of a crescendo, an escalation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way, you're both in agreement. Well, let's go ahead and listen to another song. Up next, we will discuss the Mercedes Sue Sylvester debacle, shall we say. And it culminated in Mercedes performing Christina Aguilera's Beautiful, who I cannot remember who wrote this, but here is a clip of that.
Linda Perry.
Every day is so wonderful, and suddenly it's hard to breathe. Now and then I get insecure from all the pain. I'm so ashamed. I am beautiful, no matter what they say. Words can't bring me down. I am beautiful in every single way. Yes, words can't bring me down. Oh, no. So don't you bring me down today.
So yes, as Ed interjected there, this is written by Linda Perry, formerly of Four Non Blondes.
Okay, I want to say something about Mercedes and Kurt joining the Cheerios. They joined the Cheerios because they weren't getting the limelight, which is true. They weren't getting the limelight on most of the numbers. But what doesn't make sense to me is you have characters like Tina Cohen-Chang, who's been soloed once, and then you have characters like Santana and Brittany and other Asian and other guy. Who have never been given a solo, straight up, period. So yes. I'm like I understand, like, they feel like they're being unjustified by Rachel and Finn having all the time, but you have all these other people who, like, are literally never getting their own time any of the time.
But they already have their own outlets, right? The other guys are athletes. Santana and Brittany are Cheerios already, right? Mm-hmm. So that for them, like, Glee's their side project. Right.
And you can't apply, you know, you can't apply one character's motivation to all the other characters.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, it's safe to say that they like the attention. I think that's a safe assumption.
Artie has the band.
I don't know what Tina does, but yeah, I mean, they have every opportunity to go out and find that spotlight too.
Okay. So maybe I'm just reading into it too much.
So we
are you
the,
thinking
the
of it from like the show's point of view? Like the show should give them other outlets to
no,
to be highlighted.
No, I'm just saying. Like I completely understand Mercedes and Kurt's justification as to why they quit, okay. But or not quit, but duoed.
Yes.
I just don't understand why these other characters aren't like, yo, what's up? Why aren't we getting anything? Period.
Well, it's like these characters, like, just like they in the structure of the show don't even have enough agency to make that play, right? Like they're all so secondary, right? So it would be, I mean, I'd really like to see a lot more, especially a lot more of Tina. I think, Like, she's, like, a character.
She's supposedly a main character, but I feel like she's getting... She's definitely the last main character.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but so, but they have to do a little work. Like, they have to give her a few story arcs before that would even make sense. So we hopefully we'll see that more. But, right, so Kurt and Mercedes, it makes sense to go this direction because they've had a few, you know, B plot lines. So in the structuring of the narrative fits with, you know, their role in the Glee Club, right? They're, as characters and as members of New Directions, they're both firmly in this second tier. And so it makes sense for both to give them more songs and expand because we know something about them. Mm-hmm. But then it also, it makes sense that they would have that space to do that in a way that, you know, Tina, who's mostly in the background, from a narrative point of view, feel odd if she did that at this point. But I hope we get the background necessary for her to take these kinds of steps, whatever they are, whether it's finding a side project or just asserting some kind of more agency within the group.
You make a good point, Ed, in that Brittany and Sierra have had more screen time than
Santana,
thank you.
It is not the first time you've done this.
Brittany and Santana have had more screen time than Tina. However, Brittany and Santana were not performing on Oprah as much as the rest of the kids. So there is an interesting thing there. But so we've got Sue Sylvester continuing her plot. She had a couple classic lines in this episode, as she does every day, including, "Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to put in a call to the Ohio Secretary of State notifying that I will no longer be carrying photo ID. You know why? People should just know who I am."
She was elected or voted best teacher, leader, and coach of the past 2010 years. That's kind of a long time.
For 200 years.
2,000 years.
And then Sue's favorite, or my favorite line from this one, is when she said, "Mercedes, your vocal cords have had more fantastic runs than a Kenyan track team."
Yeah.
See, I liked when she was giving her a hard time about during her weigh-in, and she's like, "Lose a little bit of that attitude. I'm sure that's good for a pound or two."
Exactly. So was this felt to me, this whole Mercedes Sue plotline, it kind of felt tacked on to me. Like, they just needed something for Sue to do. We haven't seen We haven't seen Mercedes in a little while. Amber, that's right. We haven't seen them. And so they just kind of tacked this onto the rest of the plot. To me,
I would agree with you, except I feel like we're in a momentum right now where we're going into the humanization of Sue Sylvester. The first crack was her being fired. Of course, she rebounded. And then the second crack was her, like, us realizing, like, she wasn't completely original. Some of her basis and her attitude is in Madonna. And then the next crack is that she would have been destroyed if it wasn't for the fact that Mercedes was like, "Internal power, yeah." I think this is forward momentum into the humanization of Sue Sylvester.
But I think that it'll be interesting to see where they take this, because I thought that last scene where the reporter comes into her office, and she's, you know, she's worried, right? So she thinks, I thought Jane Lynch played it really well, of at first being really confused and trying to do some kind of damage control, and then having this realization that, you know, that she was going to be known, you know, get good publicity, but for something that she hates. And you see this ambivalence, right? She, like, on one hand, like, you know, will take every good publicity, but then it's also like they're creating a structure where she may be forced to be humanized, right? So like they're humanizing her, but then in the world of the show, like, there's now this reputation that she is this way, and so that it'll be interesting to see whether she is constrained by that or whether she finds space to be herself, how they'll work out that tension and what the humanized Sue will look like.
Yeah, you make a point. She's almost being humanized against her own will.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
So, and Jennifer, you'd made a comment where this was almost the first time we saw Sue afraid of someone.
Oh yeah, we've never seen her really face to face with anybody that intimidated her. I mean, she even made the comment, "I've never been yelled at in my own office before." But you know, he comes in and he said, "Sit down," and and just kind of took control of the situation. And yeah, it was interesting to see her kind of struggle with that, glory over her own beliefs. And that was, I enjoyed that a lot.
Yes, it was interesting to see her get called into question with her own beliefs. Mm-hmm. You all make a really good point where this was almost an episode as much about Sue's growth as it was about Mercedes. I mean, even though Sue is not really growing willingly or even growing inwardly as much as externally, it is interesting that we got to, you know, outwardly we got to see all of Mercedes' tears, but, you know, it was as much about Sue and the trouble that she was going through.
There was actually another person that I don't think we can forget about.
Go on.
And that's Quinn's growth.
We definitely got more of
Quinn
this episode.
Developing into a nurturing, caring human being. If only
but she, always, she always was. I feel
what?
Like this is like this is just an, like I feel like this was always a part of Quinn. It's just now that she's not in power position, she just shows it more.
Well, yeah, and I think also that she's coming to the realization of what's important to her. And, you know, she said that she wouldn't make those changes about being healthy to her body for just her, but yet she'll do it for another being that she doesn't even know yet. And, you know, she's still trying to figure out why that's the case. But it was just nice to see, well, it was nice to see Quinn, but it was also nice to see her reach out to Mercedes, to reach out to another person where in a non-self-serving manner.
So Ren-
well, and it's interesting. So that's a kind of growth that was also, in some sense, foisted upon her, right? Mm-hmm. So that her pregnancy and her, you know, the breakup with Finn and being kicked out by her parents, all of this sort of has you know, this growth was sort of externally imposed as well. So it's mm-hmm. there's something there is an emerging theme that is looking at how people are responding, you know, to some things that are beyond their control, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that actually fits well with what we saw with Sue this episode as well.
Yeah. But I mean, in this case too, with Quinn, she didn't have to reach out to Mercedes.
Yeah.
I mean,
for sure.
In the last couple of episodes, you see her doodling and, you know, making fun of people and saying hurtful things. So
right,
it's nice
right,
to see
true.
Her, you know, not being forced to do this, but, you know, just reaching out.
Absolutely.
So a totally random piece of trivia. This is the first episode in which Lea Michele has not had a solo of any kind. Did we
really? This is the first one ever?
According to TV.com, it is. Did that? Did we miss her?
Yes.
I definitely missed
definitely.
Her.
Definitely.
No. I love Rachel just like I love Pepper. I want a little bit, but I don't want it all over everything. Okay.
Well, that's the difference between you and me. I pepper my like chocolate milkshakes. I mean, I think that you know, we were talking earlier how this episode lacked a little bit of excitement. I mean, I think that what Lea Michele, even in the ballads, brings this high level of energy, right? I mean, she felt small out. Yeah. And I think that it was odd for me to see her there, right? You know, with her arm around Justin Groff, or that's the name, right? Justin Groff.
Yes.
And there,
Jonathan.
But not singing. Like I wanted at least a little bit of like I felt like the episode was worse off for not having her at least have even like a line of solo in a group number or something. Like I actually missed having her sing a solo.
Yeah, I agree. She was a little lacking, but I know Ed, you don't need her all the time.
No. It's a complete turnaround. Like I remember episodes 1 through 5, I was like more Rachel all the time. And when it was a light Rachel episode, I know Josh, you were upset about that. But I feel like her story plots are so saturated throughout the season that I'm just like I want to explore these subplots. So as much as this episode really wasn't like the most fun or the most exciting, it really was a great tool to service these subplots that we really don't get a chance to explore that often.
And Jennifer, did you feel anything lacking without a Lea Michele in the episode?
Yes, actually it was mostly, I noticed it most when she actually had speaking lines. It's like, you're just not used to just hearing her, you know, say a bubbly line and then shut up for 40 minutes. It just, used to a lot more from her. So when I watched it back again today, that's when I was like, wow, It's weird just hearing her talk and then go away. I mean, it did. I think take away a little bit of the entertainment value of the show, but I again appreciate seeing some of the other actors highlighted. Hmm. And I meant to send it to you, but I found the song of her and Jesse from last week's show. No, 2 weeks show ago.
Oh, the one that they got
dropped. Yeah,
the chorus line.
The hello
one.
Hello, one. Yeah.
Oh, we'll have to hello, take 12, a listen
hello,
to that.
13.
Yeah, we'll have to listen to that on a future episode. And just totally other random trivia before we close this out. Michael Benjamin Washington, who played Tracy Pendergrass, is best known as a big Broadway performer. I recognized him from Mamma Mia and from an episode of 30 Rock entitled Mamma Mia.
But really?
But yeah, so yeah, just to give a shout out to him. That's pretty much all I've got. Jennifer, do you have anything else?
No, I'm good.
Ed, did you want to thank some iTunes reviewers?
Of course. I would like to thank Louisha Wallaby, whose name is Wallaby in Scotland. So what up, Scotland? Josephine, Gleek Freak, 007 Hazard, Faye 1983, Kath 5365. Thank you for writing in. I hope that I got everyone from the past week. If I didn't, I'm sorry. Thank you. Please review us on iTunes, and I really appreciate it. I read them all, so no fear. I read them all.
You can check out the website, which is www.gleefulpodcast.com. You can send us an email at gleefulpodcast.com or gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. We got a ton of email this week, and thank you so much for all of it. Lots of contest entries, which if you'd like
to... Yeah, so I'm gonna pick the winner for next week.
Okay.
I'm committing to this. So you have to have your entry in by Wednesday of next week, and I will announce the winner on Thursday.
Okay. So if you'd like to enter the contest, we're giving away some
soundtracks.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And, that's what I'm here for.
And to do so, just pick a song that you think the cast should sing and let us know what that song is, but also what the context is. So, you know, maybe a little bit of fan fiction, couple sentences, let us know why they should sing it. And you can send that to gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. I apologize. I have not responded to all the emails, but you guys are really talky this week. So that's awesome. Ryan, do you want to go ahead and plug your shows as well?
Yeah, well, I just want to thank you guys for having me on. And Matt sends his regrets that he had to cut out halfway through to head back to school. Check us out if you didn't like what we brought to the table here, then don't worry, you probably won't have to deal with it again. You know, you'll get your normal Gleeful podcast next week. But if you want a little more, check out the These Effing Teenagers podcast. You can find it on iTunes if you search These F*** Teenagers. And you can also find it on Overthinking It, our website, as www.overthinkingit.com. We're on the Twitters. It's twitter.com/TFT podcast. You can email us at podcast@overthinkingit.com. Hopefully, you know, if you liked what you heard, join the conversation. And, I think the big takeaway is the more people that are talking about Glee is good, right? I think that it's a great show. And I really appreciate you guys having me on to join your conversation. It was actually a lot of fun. It was a little more linear. Matt and I tend to go off in any number of directions. And so I'm actually really glad that your format actually forced me to think in more depth about aspects of this episode of Glee that I hadn't really thought about. And so I as I said before, that's what I value in life. So I actually had a great time, and I appreciate you having me on.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to close out here with Home, which is the last song that was performed in the episode. It is from the musical The Wiz.
Wiz.
Yes. Most famously, I suppose, performed by Diana Ross in that movie that used to give me nightmares as a kid. It's the most scary movie ever.
It was pretty creepy.
And again, totally random trivia, it was the first movie I ever had on video cassette that my parents taped off the television.
Oh my.
Yeah, totally dating myself. So for the Gleeful Podcast, I've been Josh.
I'm Jen.
I've been Ed. Oh, I'm Glee Jazz Hands.
And we'll talk to everybody next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.
I wish I was home, I wish I was back there with the things I've been knowing. wind that makes the tall grass bend into leaning. Suddenly the raindrops that fall have a meaning, sprinkling the sea makes it all clear. Maybe there's a chance for me to go back now that I have some direction. It sure would be nice